You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of September 2nd, 2015, and we have seen the light!
And it burns!
It burns! It's in my eyes, in my blood and stuff.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Albor.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. This week, we played an exclusive video game.
Well, if you want to call it a video game.
Oh, man.
Oh, snap.
Shots fired. Shots fired. We played Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, a PS4 game created by...
The Chinese Room, right? Which is only like a small group of people.
Yeah, so, this was the development house that did Dear Esther, and they did the
Amnesia Machine for Pigs.
Yeah, that's a really good title. I never played that game, but that might be one of my favorite video game titles.
It's a pretty good one.
A Machine for Pigs.
Yep.
And gosh, I feel like they may
That's what I call cop cars. Boom, Oakland.
They may have been involved in another game that I can't remember off the top of my head right now. But anyway, those two games, and especially Dear Esther, is well known for being one of those kind of exploration sims, if you will.
Yeah.
Kind of like Gone Home.
An interactive experience.
Yeah. Like the Shock series without the shooting.
Yeah, yeah.
storytelling without shotguns. So we both played it, and I feel like there's a pretty like hefty amount of stuff we can talk about from like the mechanical side, but we'll obviously have to go into spoilers at a certain point. So yes. As is always the case, we'll give people a big old warning because the plot of this game is one of the major points of playing it.
Correct.
We can start off. Let's start at the very top of like what this game is.
This is a game that is about. I guess we should talk about the premise.
Yeah, we talk about the premise. Yeah.
So the premise is that you've awoken in this lovely British valley called Shropshire, Yawton Valley. Mm. Shropshire is the small village nestled in Yawton Valley. Mm. It's a beautiful British countryside. The game is very pretty.
Very big houses for the UK.
Yeah, that's probably true. Although in rural areas, I think they probably get slightly larger. And you're the only one there. Everybody else is gone. There's no one around. You're just sort of exploring and discovering, as you soon find out, that everyone has somehow disappeared, but they've left some specific moments in time, little memories, if you will, that you can watch when you see certain sort of balls of light or orbs of light relive them in front of you as though on a family videotape. Mm. Like, oh, here's a recording of Scott doing the dishes in small little light pixels.
Yes.
And then you move on and you go continue further and further. You do find out, however, that all of those sources of light that you've seen, all those memories are from one day, the day that in which... most everybody disappeared. Although clearly the event that happened took place over a period of time. And you learn more about the events. And you sort of discover what truth you can based upon all of these conversations that people are having with each other.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the you that you were referring to.
Yes.
Like the player or the avatar that you're controlling in the game. It's a first-person game. You don't see any limbs.
No, you see no hands.
You see no hands, but you hear footsteps.
That's true.
And there's no
you are actually
apparent talking.
You're just disembodied feet.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's the thing. Like, I that was one of the questions I had through this entire game, where in one sense, it's really good at doing presence, like feeling present in a place. Yes. But then I was questioning whether that was even the point of it, because it goes to great lengths to not explain if you are a person in this town.
Yes.
Were you assuming that you were one of the people in the town the whole time?
No, I went back and forth. There's a moment where you think that maybe... so there's a character, Kate, who's one of the main, I guess you could call them protagonists, but one of the main characters in the story, who is at the center of all of this drama, this sort of scientific drama that unfolds. There is a time where I thought, maybe I'm Kate.
Mm.
But actually, quite early on, it's clear that...
I thought that at the very beginning scene. I thought that's...
Yeah, that's what I thought, right? But pretty clearly and quickly, you get the sense that you're not Kate. Kate has left she just locked herself up, and everything that you hear from her is just sort of narration from some external source, not you.
Mm.
Then for a while I thought, you know what, maybe I am a ball of light. Maybe I'm one of the people that disappeared who's now gotten sort of reinvigorated.
Mm.
I started losing a sense of who I was supposed to be at all.
Yeah.
And there are certain elements in the story that we'll talk about later that maybe point to who you could be.
Mm.
But to be perfectly honest, I don't think that they thought it through.
Yeah.
I don't think that the character that you're playing is meant to be anything but you as a player. You're That's not meant to be a real too. Person in the world.
Yeah. It meant it was kind of touristy in a way.
Yes.
But it was solid enough that you had footsteps. So it's not like you're just a camera floating around in the world.
Right, and you're not some disembodied form. And there's a quote later on that's like, oh, other people will come here and see our memories or whatever. So I was like, oh, maybe I'm one of those other people. But when you start off the game, you are like in the town. You are at the observatory outside the gates.
Yeah.
It's not like you're driving in inside your fucking Kia, you know? And oh, I'm trying to visit Shropshire. I hope my mom's in town. I'm really excited to see her. Where'd everybody go?
All these bloody tissues everywhere.
Right, like this isn't The Walking Dead where you're just some random survivor of this horrifying apocalypse, right? I don't know who you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
So there you go. Mm. I don't know who you're supposed to be.
Let's talk about the world a little bit. Mm-hmm. And also just like, I think the visuals in general are pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, the main creator, I forget his name, but he's certainly British.
Mm.
I've been to rural England areas like that. It actually looks very spot on.
Even the sky, I thought was very, like, it's that kind of low-hanging, flat grayness that you get every once in a while.
They do this great visual thing with the sky, too, that I don't think I can recall ever seeing in another video game, but they lighten and darken the screen based upon clouds passing past the sun.
That was really annoying because I tested that to see if there were actually clouds. No, there are not.
There are not clouds in the sky.
I was like, aw.
Yeah, I think everybody will test that because it's something I've never seen before.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed that touch for a while before the sort of facade breaks.
That sensation, and, you know, we live in an environment that actually is kind of like that. And, like, that the sunny day that gets obscured by high clouds is, like, a very specific vibe that, you're right, is, like, in very, very few games.
Absolutely. Yeah. I thought that was really cool. A lot of the forests are super gorgeous. The farmlands are really nice, really well sort of illustrated. I mean, it's funny, too, because I've spent some time in, like, Oxford and areas around there where I was walking around, and I have very vivid memories of, like, walking through this huge pasture full of cows to climb over a fence that had, like, those wooden blocks underneath it to climb over it.
Yeah.
And then going to, like, you know, a pub to have lunch. And the pub is wide and it's got, like, thatched roofs and totally gorgeous. So it was really cool to be in that environment. It was very evocative of the space that, you know, I was familiar with. You're familiar with. You were over there for quite some time. So.
Yeah. And the houses themselves, too. Mm-hmm. I thought, like, this is something I was thinking, I mean, for obvious reasons, I was thinking a lot about Gone Home when I was playing this game. Because there's I forget, we might have even talked about this in a recent podcast, but there's a reality to, like, the geometry in this game.
Yeah.
Like, the ceilings feel low, but really they're not. They're just regular ceilings. It's just that video game ceilings tend to always be enormous for some reason.
Freakishly high.
Yeah. And, like, the doors are totally out of proportion in most video games, but in this game, it actually feels like, oh, yeah, I'm in, like, a British architecture house. The corners are always going to be tight, and the hallways are always going to be kind of narrow. You know, like, that's just how that architecture works usually.
Yeah.
And there is this sense of, like, verisimilitude where, you know, the kitchens were laid out in a certain way, and, like, you know, there's, like, the three-point, like, here's the sink, here's the oven, here's the fridge, like, that sort of thing. Like, I don't know, there's something that felt very grounded about the whole thing.
Yeah, you know? And even the way, the layout of the houses.
Yeah.
You know, like, you go through and some of them have, the like, a tiny little living room and the kitchen in the back. Like, it feels right. I especially liked, this might sound weird, but the backyards.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, a lot of them had really cool backyards.
I wish I had a cool backyard
seriously.
That.
And I was like, this is great because it looks like it's something that's used.
Yep.
They have sheds and cars and tools are lying about, things like that.
Yeah.
There's a few areas where you can tell it's, like, a working space.
Yep.
Either they're barns or they're tractors or they're,
they got, like, a garage and stuff like
or
that. Like,
yeah, or there's, at one point, there's
or a garage.
A garage. There's an event that takes, a dramatic event that takes place during the game that happens inside of what looks like a large storage facility.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
it sounds
yeah.
silly, but that is, like, a well-realized storage facility.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the other thing that I want to call out specifically was I thought the sound design in this game was excellent. Like, there's so many times where most of the story in, like, typical kind of FPS exploration fashion is told through audio logs, whether it's a radio or a telephone or something. And there were so many times where I could just hear something faintly ringing like a phone.
Yep.
And the sound was mastered in such a way that I could kind of get a sense of, oh, this is like slightly to the right and diagonal of me.
Yeah.
Not just to the right and diagonal, you know. Yes. Like it was, yeah, so like meticulously placed in the environment. And that's just something that I generally don't notice in most video games.
Yeah.
You know,
the game also does interesting things with music where, yeah, for most of the game, there's no music, but then during certain dramatic points, it crescendos into almost like orchestra.
Yeah.
Or there are
lots, like, of choruses,
yeah, chorus and, like, singings, yeah, and almost like a religious experience.
Yep.
And there are times when it's so dramatic and so like taking up so much of the sound space in, yep, the game, and then it lingers for a very long time and slowly fades out, which I, yep, think is just kind of a cool effect.
Yeah.
It gives you something to listen to and makes you continue to think about the events of the game, even when you're just sort of backtracking, which you will end up doing a lot in this game if you are like me and sort of want to see,
yeah,
all of the story elements that you desire.
Did you feel like it was almost melodramatic in a distracting way?
Yeah, are we ready to talk shit about this game? Are we ready? I mean, is that what's happening?
I will say, okay, here, before we start talking shit about this game, I will say that I admire these types of games for going out on a limb and like making creative choices and making things interesting, if not wholly pleasant.
Yeah, I, yeah, agree. Yeah,
yeah.
There's so much of me that, and I do genuinely feel like they deserve a lot of commendation for having the bravado of saying, you know what, screw everybody else, we're gonna make the game that we want to make. We're, yeah, gonna commit to it, and not just that, we're gonna commit to it, but make sure that it's polished to our liking of commitment.
Yes. Right?
So in the case of the clouds, I honestly found that really irritating. That,
yeah,
like, it don't put shadows there to some extent.
Yeah.
If you're not going to have the clouds above you move in a parallax as well.
Yeah.
That being said, I admire that momentary feel. I think it breaks the illusion for me, but I really admire the fact that they said, you know what, there is a certain sensation you get when the ground darkens for a moment, right?
Yeah.
And I think they even knew that when that first happens, you want to look around you because you expect to see human movement in the space that's supposed to be lived in, a space that's, yeah, now empty. And so when that first happened, I started going, is my lighting off? Like, did something happen? Is there like a car in the background or something? Mm-hmm. That happens a lot throughout the game. You see like the little balls of light that appear during the game off in the distance, and there's a moment of like, oh, that's really cool, I'm gonna go follow it, or you choose not to follow it. Like, all those, yeah, little moments feel really well done, and I think that's great.
Yeah. I will say also, like, the structure of the game, which we could talk about a little bit, is you walk around this large area. Some parts of it are a village, some parts are kind of a larger town, some parts are like a vacation resort.
Yeah.
But
a little campground.
Yeah, you can skip by entire portions of this game, and you could see a lot of parts of this game out of order.
Yeah. And I think almost 100% you will,
yeah,
see them out of order.
Well, and I was kind of thinking about her story when I was playing it, because it's kind of rare for a game to be completely okay with the player either completely missing something, or maybe a dramatic moment will be lessened by the order in which it is seen.
Yes.
And it's rare that you get a game that is willing to just roll the dice. Like, if you, yeah, if you, you know, if you searched for the wrong thing in her story, you could immediately get to the mystery almost like, you know, almost within your first query.
Oh, totally.
And similarly, if you just critical path this game, you could probably just walk to the end of the game in like, I don't know, half an hour or something like, yeah, that. And then that's it. You,
yeah,
know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I really liked Dear, mm-hmm, Esther as well. I mean,
yeah,
in a similar vein, that did something fun with storytelling, and that part of the sort of game experience was unraveling the randomness of the tidbits that you do receive,
yeah,
right? There was a sort of certain mystery to that game that as you sort of understand what's happening, it sort of all made sense and it clicked to me. And I think if you commit and you finish that game, it's a really rewarding experience.
Yeah.
I don't like Everybody's Gone to the Rapture.
You're fully on the...
I've thought a lot about this. Like, after I played the game, I was like, oh, that's really good, that's interesting. I read a lot of like criticism and reviews of the game and was sort of chewing on what it was that people really liked about this game. And the more and more that I thought about it, the more and more I started disliking this for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
A lot of it is the story, which we'll get to. But it's not just that. Like, you know, I'm glad you mentioned her story, because I think the throwing it and putting it into the hands of the player is done so much better in her story than it's done in this game, in terms of pacing and in terms of having enough story there for you to unravel and chew on and explore and play with.
Yeah.
I think that There are a lot of people who are giving this game credit for being like innovative. I don't think it's innovative in the slightest.
I guess I didn't read enough about it, but I just don't understand that.
Yeah.
Like, I understand this as like a very like polished accomplishment, but I don't understand this in the context of this is a groundbreaking storytelling.
Yeah, or it's like, new, or like, I mean, not only did DRS do it many years ago and better, I think,
right,
but the idea of roaming around, finding what are essentially audio logs, and then listening to them replay, that is a form of storytelling in video games that I'm becoming increasingly less interested in. I think that there's a time and space for that, similar to like cutscenes, but to build an entire game off of that, to me, is actually very uninteresting in terms of the ways in which I interact with the narrative.
And so that's why you're saying, like, her story was,
I think
it was audio logs, but it was interactive. Like, you had to piece them together.
I think that's a far more interesting method of storytelling than this method, which I think is essentially, you know, Bioshock without the gunplay,
right,
or the powers, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, what's the Bioshock Infinite, right?
Yeah.
Like, you have this sense of space in this gorgeous environment, and I love it, and that's great, but you're still essentially interacting with the world and the story in the same way we've interacted with worlds and stories in the past.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of those same frustrations where, you know, things aren't... I end up wasting a lot of time thinking, well, maybe I can go to this door. Oh, the door's closed.
Yeah.
Like, things aren't really well lit, and I get that they want to make it feel natural.
Yeah.
And so the doors that you can go through almost universally are slightly ajar, which is like, okay, that's an interesting way of, you know, of conveying that. But from a readability perspective, it's not very good, because I end up wasting a lot of my time. And, and yes, it feels like wasting time to me, like walking around, backtracking, trying to find these stories. It feels like, and I think to its credit, I think the characters and the voice acting is really strong in this game.
I thought it was, too. Surprisingly so. Yeah.
Enough to the point where I cared about these people and I wanted to get their story. So I found it extra frustrating when, you know, I make a commitment. Okay, I'm going to circle around this town so I can see all of the houses and make sure I sort of learn and know who Jeremy is.
Yep.
And I do the loop and I don't know, like, there's no conclusion, there's no ending to that story.
Yeah.
I did end up watching a YouTube video later of the ending of Jeremy's storyline, because each story in the game does have a sort of moment of conclusion.
Yeah, there's like, yeah.
And I missed his.
Was that the one where he's at the kind of the top of the hill with the old lady at night?
He's in the church, and he has like a moment.
Nope, yeah, didn't see that.
So you and I both missed this story element, which I think is really important for the rest of the way that the game plays out.
Man.
I think it's really important for Jeremy's character.
That's annoying.
Yeah,
I kind of wanted to know what happened.
And so
having
the sense that I missed something, I kept going back and forth trying to find this location, and I never found it. And so I just continued to move on. And then only later in the game did I realize, oh, there is in fact a conclusion to that story.
Yeah.
I should go back.
Yeah.
So I start backtracking. This is another complaint, but I never figured out that there was a move fast button.
Right.
This game moves so slow.
It really does, yeah. And I know there's been a lot said about this, but I think this is a really interesting intersection of like mechanics and authorship and, dare I say, technical constraints, because like, if you were able to run fast in this game, you'd see a lot of graphical pop in. For sure.
Yeah.
Like, there is a good reason why you can't move fast in this game, and I'm almost certain, because I messed around with this game. I tried to break this game. Like, I would look at the ground, then quickly look at a big vista, and like, there's weird pop in this game.
Yeah.
But you move so slowly that the game's able to
pop out like, of people.
I mean, like, there's, I don't know, the movement thing sounds like the pettiest thing in the world, but
it really does. Like, there's no good way for you to be like, man, I sure wish I could just walk slightly faster.
Yeah, yeah. But it's true, though. I mean
it's not that, right? It's, I mean, if this were like a linear corridor experience, mm-hmm. and it was the pacing was more controlled by the developer,
yeah.
then maybe it wouldn't be as big of an issue.
It would be PT.
Sure.
Yeah. PT is like a really slow game, but it's one hallway.
Yep.
And perfect. It's a dense hallway, you know?
If I got a sense that it had better pacing, then that would be great. But the problem is when it's put into my hands, and again, sure, maybe I'm to blame. Maybe I should just accept the story that I got.
Yeah.
But I think that in the event that you say, throw your hands up in the air, get what story you may get out of it, then the story's not going to be very good.
Because mm-hmm.
I think even if you have the entire story consumed, it's still not that great.
Yeah.
Having the pacing be so unbearably slow. I mean, there are times when it's really easy to get turned around in this environment. Yeah. There are pedestrian footpaths
yep.
through the woods that when you're not exploring the main area, you'll go down and you'll hear you'll hear a phone ring. So you'll continue to explore. You'll realize, oh, I've never been here. And you'll go further and you'll find a location and there will be light there and you'll watch another memory and ask for the story and it's cool for a second. And then you realize, fuck, I'm like all the way back in right. Shropshire.
No, but I mean, you could legit be 15 minutes away from where you are in real world time.
It happened. Yeah. I mean, I went down a footpath like near, so you there's an area where there's a farm and a big field with this gorgeous like oak tree in the center and this field of wheat.
Yep, I know exactly what you're talking
about. And on the left, there's a footpath. If you follow that footpath all the way, it will take you back to the very fucking beginning of the game.
For sure, yeah.
And I did that, and I was like, well, shit.
I guess the buses aren't running anymore.
oh, that's really unfortunate. I kept seeing bicycles everywhere, and I was like, can I just get on a fucking bicycle?
Like Earthbound?
Yeah, sure, why not? I mean, I get it. Like, the story says cars aren't working. Bicycles always work.
Yeah, I was thinking about the same thing, and I was thinking about the idea that it's supposed to be a managed experience. It's supposed to be kind of a quiet experience. Like, it's definitely, like, a purposeful choice. But I think that, I don't know how many people played this game, but I really liked it last year, The Vanishing of Ethan Carter.
Oh, yeah.
It does a great job at solving a lot of the movement problems that this game runs into.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I was comparing them in my head, and I was like, you know, strangely enough, the fact that I can move fast in some games actually makes me linger in some areas longer because I know I can just get back to where I was at quicker.
Yeah.
And so like, in a weird way, at a certain point in this game, I started having really bad tunnel vision because I was like, well, I could walk all the way over across the street, but I know that's going to take me forever just to walk over there.
Yep.
Whereas if I could move faster, I'd be like, yeah, I'll spend an extra 3 minutes in this house because I know the act of getting into this house will not be an arduous one.
Yep. And there are times when the little balls of light that you discover in the game sort of lead you to where you need to go.
Yep.
There are other times where I'm pretty sure they're just fucking with me.
Yeah.
Like, I explored an area pretty thoroughly. The ball of light's still going that way. I'm like, you know what? I'm not going with you, dude. Yeah. You're way faster than me.
I thought that was a really interesting thing because I at a certain point, I wondered if that was purposeful where the balls of light just have paths and they just go on a prescripted path and it's like, I kind of was treating that thing as like kind of a troublesome companion, kind of like a dog or something where it's like, I can't control you and you're just being annoying, even though sometimes you're useful.
Yeah.
You know?
There are times, you know, I wrote a Pop Matters article about this game a while back, but for a while I wanted to write one just about the balls of light.
Yeah.
Cause I think they're actually one of the more interesting components of the game, mm-hmm. the way that they move around.
Yeah.
I also get, it's interesting cause when the game first starts, you get the sense of like, you're a stranger in this town and you don't know what's going on. And then after a while, you get a sense of loneliness and you sort of want companionship and you sort of find it in the ball of light, right? Yeah. Like sometimes the light would leave you and I would be alone and then the ball of light would show up again and I'd be like, oh, hey, buddy, like long time no see. Let's go.
Well, and also because you are pretty sure that the ball of light is responsible for the disappearance.
Well, so that's the other thing is like then the story starts to change how I see the ball of light.
Yeah.
And then I sort of turned on it again as I got increasingly angry.
Try to slowly run away from it.
Yeah, I was like, no, man, I don't trust you.
Yeah.
You came out of people's noses.
Yeah. So I think like this game requires like a huge amount of patience and a huge amount of willingness to look at a vision of what a game is rather than maybe be in complete enjoyment of what that vision is.
Yes, that's true. I just think that, you know, if you're looking for interesting storytelling in games, if you're looking for, you know, weird experimental ways of interacting with narratives, if you're looking for really brilliantly gorgeous realized worlds, there are better places to go for all of those things in other games right now that have come out this year. Like, I'm not even asking you to go play a really old game.
Right.
Play Her Story. I think it's far more interesting narrative experience then everybody's gone to the Rapture. That being said, I don't think this is an awful game.
Right, right.
I think a lot of my dislike with this game does come from the story, and we'll get to that in a bit. And yeah. I think I'm probably, maybe I'm a little bit biased.
Mm-hmm.
I could see why people really enjoy this, and it's an experience that is relatively unique still. Right?
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to get a lot of these very controlled, singular stories with no sort of crazy interaction. You're not shooting anything.
Yeah.
You're not, this isn't a platformer. It's not 8-bit style. Like, there's a lot to like about this game. So I'll definitely give it credit for that. But it's not, you know, this isn't the game that's sort of saving, you know,
this is not the answer to your AAA woes.
Yeah, and this isn't the game I would point anybody to and say, hey, you know what? Walking simulators can be really powerful narrative devices. Play Gone Home.
Play Gone Home or play Ethan Carter, because, like, if you want a kind of supernatural thing, play, man, you, people should, if people like this game at all, I really hope they go back and play Ethan Carter. I think that game, like, especially seeing this, I think that game was a bit underappreciated for what it was doing.
Yep. If you're looking for sci-fi stories,
yeah,
there are better sci-fi stories out there too that I think are really interesting.
Yeah.
What was the one we played with the robot? Well, the Swapper was really good.
The Talos Principle?
Yeah, the Talos Principle was good. No, there's another one with the robots. Oh, gosh, what was it?
Oh,
the AI one.
The Fall.
I actually
didn't like that game.
Oh, well, you're wrong. Like, the Fall is a cool piece of storytelling.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so that's sort of my thoughts before we get into spoilers.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about spoilers for a while. So we were saying that it's unclear who you are in this game, and it's unclear what the Ball of Light is, whether it's friend or foe. I actually like that dynamic. Like, I like the uneasy traveling companions. Like, that's a well-worn thing, you know?
See, like, I think that would be true if I could interact with the Ball of Light more.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
if you could call it to you or send it away, I don't know. I feel like there's missed opportunities there.
Did you feel like you were at all connected because of, like, actually having to activate some of the scenes?
No.
Okay. I mean, like the tilt?
I thought that maybe I would get a different scene based upon which direction I tilted it, but that's not the case.
It's only like an X-axis of, like...
To me, that's no different than pressing X to activate an audio log.
Yeah.
I mean, again, that's what I'm saying is, like, I feel like it thinks it's doing something different when it's not.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, I was going to ask something else about the control. Oh, I forgot what it was. Oh, well, we can come back to it. I mean, we talked about the running. We talked about
the... I like the UI. I like that it's like in-world interface.
Yeah. I don't think there's...
Not the interface, not the UI, excuse me, the menu, the pause menu.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, and
settings menu as well.
I mean, the settings menu is funny because it makes reference to, like, you have to be ready for any emergency that comes up, and there's no emergencies in this game. Like, there's no timing whatsoever.
That's true. Well, and there's not even peripheral media like that's around. There's no sense that's actually makes any sense in regards to the actual story of the game.
Yeah. So let's talk about the actual story of the game. Yes. There's these, man, you know, science, when will you learn?
Fucking science.
You know?
Will you stop fucking with, like, alien sources of life?
Yeah, you know, stop looking to the stars.
Have you not seen aliens?
It's just, nothing good can come of it.
Nothing good can come of it.
At best, there's gonna be...
Let's form a bubble around the Earth.
Earth is for Earthlings.
Exactly. Count me amongst the alien haters.
So they find at the observatory, they find something that they refer to as the signal.
Them being Kate and Stephen.
Yeah, Kate and Stephen.
A married scientist couple.
Yeah, who go back to Shropshire to study at the observatory.
Yep.
And it soon becomes clear that the signal is potentially intelligent, but for sure interested in spreading... through technology like phone lines and also into human faces.
Yeah, because it first starts to inhabit birds, which it kills. All of the birds die.
Yeah.
Note.
They don't disappear.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
It's not weird. It's just,
It's not weird that it's not there's weird. Hundreds
it's not
of
weird.
Dead birds?
It's inconsistent.
Okay. Yeah.
Is the game suggesting to us, let's fucking jump ahead real quick, okay?
Yeah.
Late in the game,
you
find out that everyone's been fucking taken away by the sources of light.
Right.
And you discover, or you hear, rather, from Kate that this pattern is some sort of connection between us all, and maybe it's a good thing.
Yeah.
You learn in a sort of weird way, Lizzie, for example, Stephen's mistress, who was impregnated by Stephen.
And also, like, an ex-girlfriend, but then they get back together or something like that.
Yeah, and they broke up because she, like, hurt her leg or something stupid like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. She's pregnant. She gets raptured. And you see a ball of light shortly thereafter, followed by a smaller ball of light.
Yeah.
That's the soul of a little baby.
a wee one.
So if we were to believe that these balls of light are somehow these two forces, the connections between them, are we then to believe that birds don't have souls? Birds don't make connections, but
I mean, according to the Catholic Church, they do not have souls, George.
Sure, that's fine, and yeah. I'm totally fine with that. But later on, the cows disappeared.
No, the cows didn't disappear.
No, yeah, where are the bodies? You think Frank buried the cows?
They're under those tarps. That's why there's flies and shit around them. Okay. It's because they didn't want to render a bunch of gross cows.
So cows also don't have souls.
Yeah, again, right. Like the Pope tells me. Sure. Yeah.
So the light continues to spread. Yeah. It gets into people. They start bleeding from the nose. Mm-hmm. They eventually say that they get increasing headaches, that they start seeing nothing but light. They lose their vision. They even see flecks of light within their blood that is coming out of their nose.
Yeah.
At which point, and seemingly out of view of everybody else, because I don't think we ever saw memory in which someone said, I literally saw a motherfucker disappear right in front of me.
Yeah, there was no actual in front of the, you know, kind of like eyes on disappearance. Yes. Yeah.
Everybody starts to disappear. Yeah. Except for the most important people in town who we watch as well. Because all of the five people we follow, that's Lizzie, Steven, Kate, who we discussed already, Wendy, who's a sort of old curmudgeonly woman in town, Frank, her brother, with whom she's having a sort of feud or a fight over time, and Jeremy, the town priest, all sort of stay until near the end and then get raptured at the same time.
Mm. Yes. Is your point that it's just kind of weird that only some people are...
I mean, it's weird in the sense that... I mean, yes. There's also... I also could keep going back to Kate's last sort of statement. This assumption that, well, this light is this connection between us all. She says everybody has like a partner. Everybody has like a person you're connected with.
Mm.
And that's like your soulmate almost in a way. And again, the game doesn't use these terms, but it's pretty easy to attach these terms to them.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then who's the baby? Like, is Lizzie's baby, is that her partner now?
Yeah.
This unborn fetus inside of her is that the thing?
Like, yeah.
I don't know. What about the people who have like, what about the people who are young, right? Like there's a pretty sad moment actually when Jeremy's going through town and he encounters this woman in her house, and the woman was trying to leave with her family, her husband and her two children. And the woman is sitting crying in the living room, and Jeremy is like, oh, what happened? And she's like, I was actually really touched a lot by the voice acting in the game, in particular in the various moments where people feel shame.
Yeah.
Like she's sort of ashamed that she went into this house because it's not her house.
Mm-hmm.
And she presumes like, oh, they probably wouldn't mind. So we decided we wanted to rest here.
Yeah.
It happens with Wendy too, right?
Yeah. Oh, it happens with the guy who leaves his dying wife. Like,
yeah.
That was crushing.
It's rough. Yeah. It's super, like, super sad. And that sense of like,
weakness and shame at that weakness.
At a moment when you need that strength the most, when like the world is literally ending.
Yeah.
I find so moving, and it's just like, I hate it. I hate that sense of shame that these people feel when they need to feel like courage, right? Mm-hmm. And so she's feeling this sense of shame, and she's on the couch, and she's telling Jeremy that her children were having headaches. They got tired, so they stopped.
Yeah.
Their nose started bleeding. And as she's crying, she's saying her kids were so scared.
Yeah.
They were so scared that the husband was like, I'm going to take the kids upstairs and put them to bed and try to get them some rest.
Yeah.
And they didn't come down for hours.
Yeah.
And she just stood there scared to go upstairs. Yeah. Right? That story, like that moment of her feeling all the shame and fear and her kids feeling fear, that just fucking like infuriates me when I hear at the end that it's okay because it's all about connections.
Mm.
Like, that just fucking drives me off the wall.
Yeah.
Maybe
that's okay. Maybe you're not... Maybe Kate is not a likable person.
I don't like her. I don't think... And sure, that's fine. Yeah. But, like, what is the game trying... What is everybody's gone to the rapture trying to get me to do? And I think to some extent it's trying to say, look, we're all going to die in this world, but during this time that we're here, we do make these connections, and they're powerful and they're fleeting.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are written in these tiny moments. And even in these tiny moments, even at the bitter end, we can be good to each other, and there are opportunities for change.
Yeah.
You know, the feud between Frank and Wendy, I think, is done very well.
Mm.
I really like that they come back together again and they sort of are okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. I like that message.
Yeah.
But the fact that that message is being told with an end of the world story where people are literally having like basically tumors, and there's fear, and there's like paranoia, and they're bleeding, and everyone is dying, and they're losing all of these connections. They don't know it, but even if things like if we're supposed to believe it's okay, right? Mm-hmm. I still don't feel like that justifies not having people express more anger or hostility. I feel like the only person who ever really expresses that in this game is Steven, who's actually trying to do something about what's happening with his fucking light as like an alien force.
Right.
Everyone else in this game is relatively calm in the end, right? Like Wendy's just trying to find Steven. Frank's like, I'm okay dying now, even though he does a very brave act in trying to save the villagers. I think his story is probably one of my
favorites. Well, and also he like calls in... Does he call in the planes? He's one of the people.
Steven calls in the planes to kill everybody.
He has the air raid.
Yeah, because he's trying to warn the town. And that's a great... I think that's a great storyline.
I think that's probably the best scene in the game, too, because you just see him looking out over the town.
Yeah, and he's talking to his deceased wife, who he failed and like feels bad about.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the bombs are falling in these like orbs of light. And you know everyone's dying, but like, you know, in his last moment, Frank really tried to do some good, which is great. But I feel like this game is lacking... It's lacking a strong... voice of opposition to the message that we should be okay with what's happening to us. Does that make sense?
Yeah. In the absence of someone like Frank who decided to fight at the last moment.
Right.
Yeah.
Or you know, even so,
how did the religious angle end?
Yeah. So the religious angle. Yeah. Like, so Jeremy's storyline is all about his struggling with faith, and everyone's always questioning him, like, Father, you know, why should this be happening?
Yeah.
Jeremy was probably my favorite character in the game.
Yeah.
Because he does what I think is so... I mean, him and Lizzie, actually, were probably my favorites. He does what people should do in those times and provides what comfort he can, even when he feels like it's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that. And I enjoyed his wavering faith story. The way that it ends is he's in church... And a lot of people have disappeared.
Yeah.
And he's like crying and he's praying to God.
Yeah.
And the light is there and it like sort of speaks to him. It wavers.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the sense that he thinks it's God speaking to him.
Yeah.
And then he's raptured. I get the sense that they're trying to make me feel okay, as though Jeremy accepted his fate and was fine with it.
Hmm. Well, I mean, I know he was talking with Frank at a certain time. I think it was Frank. And he was at a certain time, like Frank, again, maybe not Frank, but it was one of the older guys. You know, another thing is, I should have turned on the subtitles.
You definitely should. I did. It was hugely helpful.
Yeah, I was thinking about that halfway through the game, and I was like, well, I've come this far. Maybe this is part of the challenge of this game.
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe I should really learn the characters.
I mean, honestly, there are not that many characters with speaking lines beyond those five.
Yeah.
There's, like, the doctor and his wife, but there's very few. It's probably Frank.
So, he was talking to Jeremy, and he was saying, I'm just so mad at him. You know, how can I go back? I'm so mad at him. And he's talking to him as God. He's talking about God, like how mad he is.
Oh, it is Frank. Yeah, it's Frank because Frank's wife died.
Right. And Jeremy even says something like, you know, everyone has thoughts like this, but you just have to, you know, kind of believe that there is something else that you don't understand.
So maybe I'm just like a hostile atheist.
Well, I mean, but I feel like Jeremy is one of those, you know, people of faith that was brought to faith for the structural integrity that the community of faith provides, rather than the kind of apocalyptic vision of what faith can be.
Yes.
And now Jeremy is a type of person that becomes a priest because he likes to help people, not because he necessarily believes in for real angels. And now he's having to face a world where maybe for real angels are coming and killing people, you know, like, and so he is kind of mad. He is kind of mad, you know, like,
And I agree. I like that scene, but I think what we're supposed to take away from this though, is that he's right that like we should just have faith.
Mm.
I mean, I get a weird sense that this game is trying to. I guess the question is: do you think that this is a Christian game? Does it have a Christian message?
Right.
Is this trying to proselytize in some way? Is it trying to remind me that I should have faith, that there is a God, that you know, that the reasons we shouldn't be mad the way that Frank is mad?
Yeah.
There's a sense of me, and again, maybe it's the sort of aggressive atheist in me, the part of me, if you will, that thinks, no, I think that being angry is something that we should be angry at loss, and that it's okay to be angry at loss, and that it's superhuman to be angry, and to like to quell that, to put that aside and say, oh, you know what, we're just going to trust faith to figure things out for us.
Yeah.
You know, the villagers, especially in this section with Jeremy, have this futile effort that they're going to get together at the town village and sort of pray together
yeah.
and talk about what's happening.
Yep.
It happens again later on at the camp. Lizzie gets everybody together in one place to go and watch Peter Pan as a method of calming everybody down.
Yeah.
There's not as many discussions of saying, let's get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Let's find ways to get out.
Right.
I get more the sense that everyone's going to get together, wait it out, see what happens, put their faith in either God or society, which does, by the way, ultimately fails them in the form of gas bombs,
yeah.
which also, by the way, maybe get dispersed a little bit easier when you crowd everybody into one room sharing the oxygen.
Right. Right.
Like it almost makes them an easier target to be yeah. killed, right?
Yeah.
That I find that too complacent in the face of the story that we're hearing, be it one about God or one about an alien life form
right.
accidentally taking people away.
Did you put any stock in the potential that this is actually a story about the alien itself?
Yeah. I mean, that was one theory, right? That the character that you're playing at the beginning of the game is actually the alien visiting and being like, man, I sure fucked these people up good.
Woo! I mean, it's finally kind of somehow taken corporeal form and is now able to revisit some of the...
I mean, I would have preferred some confirmation there, right? Like, either... a sense of, oh, I did good or I did bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a story that, that Steven tells at the end of the game about saving a fox.
Yeah,
and you get the sense that, well, this could be an alien that an alien form, if you will, or life, whatever we want to call it, that doesn't realize it's doing harm.
Yeah.
And I saw someone's comment, I think it was on a YouTube video, mentioned something I thought was interesting, and they said, well, what if the person that's actually doing harm is Steven? Steven is the fox in the story.
Yeah.
He's accidentally harming people by killing them, literally. Like, he accidentally potentially kills a guy inside that storage facility. And he gets the bombs dropped on the town and causes more suffering than he should. Maybe that's true. I think that's an interesting piece of science fiction if you do consider that to be the case.
Well, and that's like a pretty... there's like... kind of 15 different Star Trek episodes that all deal with, oh, this alien was just trying to communicate and he accidentally hurt people.
I still don't think I'm satisfied with that. I feel like it's not showing us enough. Like, okay, fine, let's imagine it's an alien and the story is actually about this alien form and it fucking takes everybody away and they're fucking dead. Or maybe they're just copies of themselves,
or maybe they're like part of the signal now.
Yeah, and they're just part of the signal now. And maybe it's great. Maybe, hey, being in the signal, super nice. They've got fucking bottle service.
Maybe this is transistor fanfic.
Sure, yeah, whatever, right? Like, they're all part of the signal now, and that's okay. Yeah. And we'll have our term to be the signal, whatever.
Yeah.
I still don't feel like that justifies the sort of the suffering that these people go through, you know? And if it's going to be a story about these people suffer, but... even in their suffering, they maintain some humanity. That's fine. But then embrace that. You know, have it be confirmed. You know what? Yes, it's a fucking alien.
Yeah.
And he killed everybody.
Yeah.
And now they're all part of the hive mind. And this is the way the world ends.
Mm.
And there's no good of it. And it just was.
Yeah.
I would be almost better off with that. But the very final scene is the observatory at night. There's all these like weird candles everywhere.
Mm.
There's Kate talking about like these shared connections.
Yeah.
And...
well, you kind of feel like at the end, Kate became... she was the only one that maybe successfully was able to become a hybrid being, almost.
Yeah, I mean, she says, like, what, there's the gas helped her not die from the light earlier. But that doesn't imply that the light somehow favored her or anything.
You know?
I mean, and then she says the partner, the thing that she had this connection to was the pattern itself.
Yeah.
Which I also thought didn't make any sense and felt like some rubbish sci-fi line just to throw in and not actually thought out.
Right.
Because if you're going to be part of the pattern, how is the pattern itself your connection? And then now what are you in this pattern?
I mean, she was the one that was kind of looking at the pattern as a being, like saying that it was scared and saying that it was confused and things like that.
But to me, and again... I think there's an element here where if we're going to be the humans that are left behind, that are stuck on this earth, then we have to understand it from a human perspective. So I sort of refuse to try to meet Kate halfway to understand it from the alien perspective.
Mm.
Because even as Kate is prattling on about how, oh, this light is this connection and this pattern and we're all a part of it and like this is a good thing, she could just be having a fucking tumor in her head and she's wrong.
Right.
Right. And I have no evidence... otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think Kate I don't know. I'd have a hard time believing that Kate is very much a sympathetic character in anyone's perspective.
You think?
I don't know. I mean,
I think there's a sense that that at the end of the game we want to,
like, believe what she says.
Well, believe and sort of be on her side, right? Like, there's a while where we really dislike her because she's sort of yelling at Steven and stuff. But hey, Steven also totally cheated on her and got another woman pregnant and didn't tell her about it and pretended, you know, to not know about it.
Yeah.
She's been devoted to her work and that's fine, but, you know, at the end she talks about how she's okay with it. Like, oh, now that Steven is a ball of light and burnt to death in a fire, that's totally cool. Yeah. You know, him and Lizzie are together. I'm happy for them.
Yeah.
Who are you happy for? They're gone. Like, you're happy for this concoction of these sort of figures of light that are now melded into this singular pattern.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you're happy to be able to pick and choose the type of memory and signal that you wish to remember them by. You know, like,
but that's like self-delusion.
I mean, I think she is kind of like, I was kind of seeing her as the villain in the story for like a good chunk of the game. Right. And then the end of the game was more about the justification of why that villain acts the way that villain acts. Mm. It's like, oh, okay, this person, for better or worse, misguided or no, believes that she has made a truce and an understanding with this being, and that's why she was willing to overlook all of the kind of death and destruction that it brought, you know?
Yeah.
Not that I agree with it, but just that the end was an understanding of, like, her madness, you know? Like, especially going through all of those towers, you know, of the observatories, it's like, oh, this is you're kind of, in a weird way, you're walking through the Bible that she has now written. Like, she's like a kind of a weird prophet type figure, you know? She's like, true. She like believes in this thing that is scary and somewhat harmful, and she's having to justify things in a not scientific way at all.
So you took the very, like, this is a sci-fi story perspective.
I guess, but, you know, with plenty of faith in there. But yeah. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, it was a very much like an Alien type story for me. Because, I mean, like, the difference, you know, whatever. What's the, like, Arthur C. Clarke thing? Like, sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. Like, like, at this point, we are encountering a being that is so alien and powerful compared to us that it might as well be a deity.
This is also sort of why, by the way, like, I don't think these are very well-written scientists. You know, I feel like they would probably be a bit more scientific about it.
Well, I mean,
your answer is not, oh, it's a being. It's, oh, I don't know. I mean, presumably by this point, they've already been infected.
Yeah.
And therefore,
everything is off for them. Right. Yeah. I mean, the one person that I thought was most scientific was the doctor who was observing himself as he was dying.
Yep.
Did you listen to that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that one quite a bit because he was one of the few people that kind of knew what was happening, but to the very end was there to investigate.
Yeah.
Whereas Kate had kind of given herself over to the light, and Steven had kind of put himself in opposition of the light to the point that he is willing to self-immolate instead of giving himself to the light, which I thought was a really powerful scene.
Yeah.
But still, like, he's looking at it. But
then at the very end, then he's like, oh, Kate, is that you?
Yeah.
And then he accidentally drops it.
Yeah, well, I mean, he sees, I mean, there's plenty of, I just watched a play where, you know, someone calls out to their husband and Orpheus turns around and then she is dragged back to the underworld. Like, there are plenty of times where people turn around when they're not supposed to turn around and where people see things when they're not necessarily supposed to see them.
That's true.
Yeah. And, like, that's, again, that's a religious parable, you know, like where there's a lot of religious stuff in this game. But yeah, I agree with you on all of these points, and I feel like sometimes it's just kind of mystery for the sake of being mysterious.
Yeah,
like, in a way, in this world of, like, complete and total relativism at all times, it's actually somewhat more interesting when things are explicitly defined, because, like, oh wow, they're really taking they have a take here. Like, they, you know, they're making a decision, you know? Yeah, like,
I think that's a really good point. And I think that, to some extent, saying that you walking through this environment, you're just a player, you're not a person, this world is completely empty, is kind of a cop-out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I find that uninteresting, because then I have no other perspective to take than my own.
Yeah.
Which increasingly becomes one of, well, then I'm left behind and I have no hope of understanding what the fuck they're talking about because I'm not infected by light and I don't see the pattern that they see. And so maybe it's me being stubborn, but I refuse to try then. Mm. Because if I don't see it, then I'm not going to see it. Like, right. I can't see it from their perspective.
Yeah.
I mean, I could pretend. I can say, oh, yeah, yeah, maybe this light is some pattern and we're all connected. And, you know, this isn't me saying, like, there isn't some sort of powerful story, and I'm not trying to hate on religious thought or spirituality, because yeah. I think there's a lot of value there, and you know, I
think it would be more interesting though if they were just like, yes, one of the lights told me his name was, you know, Jeremiah or something like that. You know, like, I think it would be like interesting.
Yeah.
Like, if
yo, Steven, yeah, this is God.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think it would be almost more interesting if the light explicitly said, yes, I am from Rigel 7.
Yeah.
Or one of the balls of light said, yes, my name is Gabriel.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. I think it would be more interesting.
I 100% agree. Like, yeah. 100% agree.
Yeah. 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 So, I mean, it's always fun to play these types of games that you have a strong reaction to, even if maybe they're a little bit too long or a little bit too meandering or something like that. But it's a good kind of brain workout, and also to think about how the actual control of the situation impacts your story.
And this could be one of those games, by the way, where someone convinces me that I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Like, it's very likely that my perspective on this game changes several times over the next few years.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we'll see.
So we'll leave it open for interpretation from you all. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our bomb shelter. We're not infected with light.
Yeah.
But
don't look at this nosebleed. I swear, it's allergies. It's fine. It's allergies.
Those allergies that give you nose.
Yeah, you know.
Those are the worst. If you will do us a favor, please leave us a star rating on iTunes. I think I'm over leaving written reviews because nobody reads those anyway.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Well, they only listen to audio logs now. So if you just upload a SoundCloud.
Hey, I'm totally okay with that.
And do it through like a weird grainy radio filter.
Yeah, even the radio thing, that's so... I mean, are we beyond that?
No, we're never beyond the audio logs.
Whatever.
All right, until next week, everyone, thank you for listening. We will talk to you soon.
Bye.
There's a place you go to, because I